The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. We're glad you can join us once again, and I want to remind you that we are not rendering legal, accounting, or other professional advice, and if such advice is required, it is strongly recommended that a professional advisor be engaged. And for most of the topics we discuss on this show, we strongly encourage you to be working with a professional advisor that consults in the areas of real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation, and real estate private partnership syndication, multifamily projects specifically. And then lastly, have an understanding of how to achieve the zero tax rates as you move into your retirement, quote unquote, years. By the way, what is retirement? You know, we throw that word around a lot, and I think that most people tend to ascribe the traditional, you know, I'm 65 years old, the company says I have to retire, and then they quit working, and I guess do, you know, assorted activities. I've watched a lot of my clients retire over the years. I was what I look back on fondly as young at the age of 25 when I left the relative, I'm going to say safety, quote unquote, of a large professional firm, one of the big eight we referred to them as back then. And I think now there's four. Been a lot of consolidation. Of course, Arthur Anderson, the company I worked for, or the firm that I worked for, was put out of business by the SEC, I guess it was, and it was a mistake. They admit it now, and because it took away a lot of the auditing capacity that was necessary, especially at probably one of the worst times in the financial history of our financial industry with respect to bad audits and earnings restatements, etc. And so in any event, and then moreover, that case was overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court 9-0 at a later date. So in any event, you know, the concept of retiring, I like to refer back to what Marvin Zindler, you know, the Channel 13 restaurant report guru, used to say every Friday night when he would sign off after giving his report. He would indicate, so, you know, what are your plans this weekend? You know, go to the park, go to the zoo, go fishing, golfing, or do whatever makes you happy. And I would tell you that that is the best definition of retirement. When you get up tomorrow, or you wake up, what do you have to do? Or do you have to do anything? And that really, in my mind, is what retirement is. And for a lot of people, it might be continuing to work or operate your own small business. There's a lot of benefits to operating a small business, especially in the context of real estate private partnership syndication and retirement planning. Having a self-employment income doesn't have to be the next Amazon. any kind of side gig or part-time, you know, mowing yards, driving an Uber, you know, consulting. Maybe you're an expert in a certain area, and that was what you were doing before you were shown the door at the large company. But there's a lot of ways to generate the tax status of being self-employed, which is critical for one of the best strategies as you invest in real estate private partnerships. And in any event, before I move on, I want to just say, for those of you that don't have advisors currently that discuss these areas, again, real estate taxation, retirement plan taxation and planning, and real estate private partnership syndications, and finally, zero tax math strategies, feel free to go to our website at baplanner.com or baplannershow.com. We've got both sites that'll have links to get to our forms page. And once you're there, if you'll undertake step one, form one, client profile, and submit that to us, then you can schedule a call. It's at the link right next to the forms link. There's a call scheduler, and if you'll complete that, I'll get notice of it and be happy to schedule some time to go over your form submissions and see if we think we can sync up with your goals and objectives. Today, I want to finish talking about a topic we started, I believe it was a couple weeks ago. We were looking at the risk factors involving real estate private partnerships that are mandatory to be disclosed in every private placement memorandum that's produced under the crowdfunding statute, at least those that are provided to opportunities offered under the 506B, as in boy, statute, versus 506C, as in cat, portion of the statute. The former, the B option, is available to non-accredited investors, whereas the C is only available to accredited investors. That's probably the biggest differentiating factor, but there's others. You know, there can be no advertising or promotion of the B style. There can be of the C type. So if you're accredited, theoretically, you're more knowledgeable in these matters, i.e. syndications. And the SEC or the Texas State Securities Board doesn't afford you as much protection as one that is non-accredited. And if you're non-accredited, then, you know, you're assumed to not be as knowledgeable in these matters, although there is a requirement that you have a certain level of sophistication. So it's only sophisticated non-accredited folks that can participate in these crowdfunding private partnerships. And sophisticated is not really well defined under the statute, but let's just say that you've had some level of training. Maybe you join one of the mentor programs that you hear on the radio here and in other cities around the country, or you work with a CPA like us that it pretty much focuses on consulting in the private partnership realm with multifamily projects, and we're working with you on analyzing opportunities and trying to help you understand what you're signing up for when it comes to the math. But in any event, the risk factors that are mentioned in every PPM, they're mandated under the crowdfunding statute, I believe it's Rule 5, require disclosures of what are the risk, and there's different categories. There's general risk, there's economic risk, there's real estate risk, and there's probably a total of 20 to 25 in virtually every opportunity. And, you know, people look at those, you read many of them, and you think, well, you know, these are pretty much common sense. I already knew that it's not like buying a stock, you know, maybe Apple or AT&T or whomever. And of course, that's in our mind, that's a good thing. It's not like buying a stock. But I know a lot of people that you know, invest in the stock market wouldn't consider investing in a private real estate transaction involving apartment buildings, especially old apartment buildings, which is what most of our clients are in, because old apartment buildings are where the money is. And, you know, if you want to invest in the new build, the new Class A type property, there's plenty of those that you can join. But the value add opportunity, or the upside in value that can be gained from those properties, may not be as significant. It may be more assured, but it may not be as significantly rich in terms of the difference between what you buy it at and what you sell it at. And, you know, you might want to think about this in the context of, do you buy a stock or do you buy a treasury bill? You know, the treasury bill is more assured, just like the Class A apartment building might be. Depends on who's running it, depends on where it's located, etc., and what its, you know, operations consist of. You know, there's a number, quite a few Class A apartment buildings that are successfully managed. There's others that are not. It oftentimes comes down to who is leading the transaction. And in fact, in most cases, I would tell you that's the biggest unknown. And if you can verify the background, the experience, whether they've encountered hardships, how they've dealt with hardship, anybody that's been in the syndication business as a lead partner or sponsor, syndicator, etc., they've had some hardship typically. If they haven't yet experienced that, maybe they're new to the business, I would let that train depart the station without you being on it and look for the next train coming in. As I think often when I'm flying on a big airplane back and forth to Southeast Asia, where I live most of the time, I like to see the white-haired older pilots come out of the cockpit when they're taking a break, and I like people that have been shot at. I mean, maybe not literally, but figuratively. And in some of those folks' case, it's literally. They were pilots back in the Vietnam or other wars that have occurred, and I guess maybe the Vietnam era, they're probably retired at this point, but they weren't when I first started making that journey. And I like to know that if something goes sideways, as the expression is, there's a good chance that whoever's piloting that aircraft has been through it before and knows what to worry about in life. But in any event, I feel the same way about syndicators. Anyway, all this being said, I'm going to circle back now to the concept of why we started talking about risk factors 2 weeks ago. We were talking about one of my favorite topics, which is Roth conversions. And when we return from our break that we'll take here momentarily, we will get back in, we'll summarize where we were at in that long discussion, and we'll move forward to some more specific discount factors that we get to deploy as we seek to ascertain the tax base and therefore how much tax the Roth conversion will cost us. Okay, we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And, you know, it just occurred to me while I was listening to the break, I probably, since, you know, we have all different levels of understanding by listeners that tune in each week, I should mention specifically what is a real estate syndication or private partnership. And I guess that's probably the most basic concept that this whole discussion about Roth conversions is predicated on. And it is truly a unique opportunity if you are interested in investing in real estate. It's a unique opportunity that can allow you to easily keep your day job, at least as long as you find joy and satisfaction and cash flow out of that. I wouldn't try to make you feel, or I wouldn't disparage anybody that likes working, especially in a job. I hear others on the air in the real estate space that make it sound like you're a leper if you know, you decide that, hey, you like working, you like the company you're working for, and you get compensation out of it. And if you're getting paid for something you like to do, it's almost not work. And, you know, I think it's pretty obvious when you hear others disparage the job or working for the man that maybe that's what they did when they were working at one time. And maybe they didn't like their job and they didn't like the products or the services that they were rendering or selling. And I would just caution people, don't feel like you're a loaf just because you don't agree with them. You can have the best of both worlds, and that's what's beautiful about syndications. And you know, the concept of a crowdfunding project or syndication is that it involves multiple investors. And I'm going to give you the 10-minute drive-by. I understand there's going to be some sharpshooters out there that are saying, no, Nathan's got all that wrong. But I'm going to tell you right now, I can summarize in about 30 minutes what you're going to spend $20,000 to $25,000 if you join one of the mentor platforms available to you to learn the same thing over, I don't know, the first quarter. I think most of the programs recycle content on a quarterly basis. Well, it all boils down to a few basic premises that you'll be in the same spot without spending the $20,000 to $25,000. But the first step, and we'll have more on that discussion and on future shows, I've talked about that topic before and it's time to do it again, but let's just focus on what is a syndicated multifamily investment at base, so then you'll understand some of the risk factors that we've already discussed. But in any event, a real estate private partnership syndication involves multiple investors, and here's the key word, passively pooling their funds in a partnership under the U.S. Security Exchange Commission's crowdfunding statute. Passively is the key word. And you give up your money, you put your money into the transaction, you trust a lead partner, syndicator, sponsor, it all refers to the same party, who's going to take those funds as pooled together and go buy a multifamily. In this case, we deal with multifamily. They're going to go buy a multifamily property. They're going to do, in most cases, significant search efforts. They're going to do, they're tasked with choosing a property, first and foremost, performing due diligence on that property to determine is it a viable prospect for the group to purchase and make money with. I mean, that's the bottom line concept. There's a lot of twists and turns between deciding to purchase and deciding to sell, to where you've either made money or you've lost money. And the due diligence is a critical portion of the undertaking. But the point is, this is the lead partner or syndicator or sponsor. It's the person that usually serves as the manager for the limited liability company that you'll be investing in, and that takes a huge burden off of your back, especially if you're new to real estate. And this is an opportunity where you can get on the wagon and participate in typically what are above average rates of return. Not always, it's not guaranteed. At base, it is a trade or business. It is a small business. And so for those of you, and I hear this all the time, that invest in these transactions and then say, well, you know, gee, I didn't get a check this quarter, like as if it's a stock with a dividend. That's not how real estate private partnership syndications or real estate period is necessarily structured. There are no guarantees in any small business, and especially in real estate. The guarantee is that all of us need a place to lay our head down at night. We don't all need to work on a MacBook, you know, so we, you know, that's what keeps Apple afloat, or an iPhone, I guess, more likely. But it's a pretty common basic physical requirement that we get nightly rest, or whenever, daytime, I guess, as well, depending on maybe you're working at night. But bottom line is, you don't really want to plan to sleep out in the streets. You got to have a structure, and apartments or multifamily is the low-hanging fruit in the real estate market. It's sure not office. You know, the office market is in significant distress, and industrial projects are doing, I guess, better than average. and some retail, medical facilities. These are all available to you as a syndicated investment if you know the right ponds to fish in. And again, if you're accredited, meaning that you have at least a net worth of $1 million or more, you've got access to any of the above. However, I would tell you, think about what I just said about everybody needs a place to lay their head at night. They don't need a place to go shop. You know, we can do that online. It's hard to sleep online, by the way. And, you know, medical facilities, yes, you got to have the physical medical facilities, but not necessarily something you got to do every night, right? So we like multifamily for purposes of generating as significant and as routine or consistent cash flows as possible. So the manager of the LLC, again, syndicator, sponsor, or lead partner, responsible for arranging the acquisition, including necessary debt placement, so they find the loan. You don't go find your loan like you would if you were buying a single family. Single family is a great area in the overall real estate umbrella. However, the way we make money is significantly different. And it's the reason that we can be more passive, perhaps, not always, but typically, than we would be if we were buying single family rental properties. And there's no question that on average, the types of returns we can generate are significantly higher with multifamily. And again, you don't have to get out of bed every morning to go run those typically Class C or B apartment complexes. And, you know, we've got folks that excel at it. Generally, if you have joined any of the local platforms, you'll very quickly realize that it's harder than you think. And there's people that are already doing it, most likely, in that group that you may want to look to. And even if you're thinking you want to be a lead partner at some point, go join an existing syndicator or sponsor or lead partner on a project that they're getting ready to embark on. Learn how it's done. Watch how it's done before you dive in and regret it later. The manager role is also tasked with managing the ongoing operations of the partnership and its assets throughout its existence. And so, you know, they're going to hire contractors in the outset to do the rehab if it is the type of property that consists of adding value through eliminating the deferred maintenance. So in other words, we're trying to make it as nice as we can within the context of it being a Class C or Class B. You typically aren't going to be able to raise the character of that property by more than maybe a plus or a minus. You know, if you're a C plus going in a purchase, you might be able to get it to a B minus, but you know, you're probably not going to change a whole character upgrade. That's hard to do because you're not moving that property from the current neighborhood or location that it's at to a different part of town. And you know, I'll never forget what one of my mentors told me the group, the first time we went on a road trip, went and visited a property that was in Houston over in the Spring Branch area. And he pointed to a very nicely renovated property right across the street from the one that we were going to tour, which wasn't nearly as nice. I mean, it was a clean, functional property generating good cash flow. And he made the point, he said, hey, that used to be a low C property, a C minus, before some group bought it and turned it into a B plus, or sought to turn it in probably to a A minus. But in any event, he said, if you ever think you're going to, and they were not full, by the way, it was low occupancy. He said, go walk into the nearest grocery store, Walmart, HEB, that kind of retail, and look at the folks that are they're shopping in there, and notice what type of jobs they work, what type of apparel they may be wearing, and if the bulk of them are dressed, you know, to fit the neighborhood, you're not changing. Let's say fit the neighborhood, literally and figuratively. You're not going to be able to change the character of that property up very far at all, because it's the environment that you're going to be attracting to your property. You hope you attract new tenants, and that's pretty much the class of tenant, what you're going to find in a local grocery store that you'll be getting. And that's not a good thing or a bad thing. It's an observation. It's a way for you to understand what your options are. And that's a piece of advice that I still, even though that was 20 years ago, I still remember that admonition. I want to remind you, just as a side here, we do not sell investments. We're talking about real estate investing, obviously, but we do not, the Be A Planner Show, Nathan Ross, CPA, or other folks that I have on the show periodically, we are not selling investments on this show, nor do we recommend or promote specific investments, syndicators, sponsors, or lead partners. Rather, our objective is to assist you in understanding what you're signing up for regarding opportunities that you may be considering, whether it's from a platform that you're on. And we strongly recommend you get some independent advice, because you have to understand most of the platforms have ulterior motives to attracting you to invest in transactions that are offered on their platform. And you probably have already figured that out. You don't need a CPA on the radio telling you that, but I'm just suggesting get some independent advice from somebody that doesn't have a dog in the hunt, as the old expression goes, and make sure that you understand the math that's involved thoroughly. Math that you may not be told about if you're looking at a transaction on a platform and the only people that are advising you, your mentors, are folks that get paid, they got a job with the platform. You really would like to have someone that's in the same investment space give you some critical analysis about those possible outcomes. Tell you what, we're right on top of our second break. Let's go ahead and take it. And finally, I promise, we'll get back to the topic of the day, which is Roth conversions in light of the risk factors involved. We'll circle back here momentarily with the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to knowing, showing a little bit more concern about where you're going. There's a word unto the wise. You better get to living.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, When's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Big dreams and faded dreams.
To the final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And we're going to discuss just briefly, I'm going to summarize the risk factors we talked about a couple weeks ago. And then I'm going to mention specifically the how we determine the fair market value for the Roth conversion that dictates at a high level now that will dictate how much tax we're going to pay. And categorically, as I mentioned earlier in the show, we have investment and offering risk. And this would be things like, the units that you're buying are not a diversified investment, you know, like maybe a mutual fund might be. A company that's offering them cannot assure, and this is a big one, and this is where you really have to understand the math. It's all about the math, whether you're talking about multifamily or most other investments, actually. But for sure, when you get into the real estate realm and the private syndication, but this is a huge risk factor, is that the company offering the units cannot assure you that the price they're offering them at, the offering price of the units you're buying, is an accurate reflection of their value. Because when you think about it, you know, if you were going to buy the property, you would deal directly with a seller and you would arrive at a value mutually agreed. The fair market value, by the way, the way we define that generally, is it's the value that a willing buyer will pay a willing seller in exchange for that asset, where both parties know all the facts and circumstances. There's no punches being pulled. There's no gotchas. That's the fair market value. But in the context of a syndication, you've got overhead of the partnership. You've got assorted other things that have to be funded. You're giving typically a syndicator, lead partner, etc., 20 to 30, maybe as much as half of the future cash flows out of that project. That's one of the fees. There's other fees, by the way, and I don't want to get into that topic today. It'll take me the rest of this show and two more. It's a real sore spot with me, by the way, on these large, you know, 300 to 800 unit syndications. But in any event, this investment risk is huge, probably the most significant of, well, it all starts here. You don't have any way to know realistically if you're paying a fair value. So let's move on. The next category are operational risk, things like, let's see, having, you know, there's no assurance you're going to get tenants in that property. There may be significant conflicts of interest between the lead partner and other opportunities that he's assessing or she's assessing. You're typically going to have very little say-so over whether they can go do another project, maybe right next door to the one that you're investing in. That's beyond your control. Let's see, the next category would be the real estate risk involved. Just real quick, adverse changes in local and National economic conditions, changes in the availability of debt financing and refinancing, that is huge right now and has been for the last year or two. Changes in the relative popularity of the properties or in real estate generally as an investment class in the market that you're in. Changes in cap rates, changes in utility rates. Huge one is change in insurance rates that we've had over the past several years. I mean, this is real time, these risk factors that are playing out. So anyway, operational, and then we've got federal income tax risk, I guess would be the last category, and changes in tax laws. You know, we've been pretty fortunate. Most of the changes have gone in the favor of the real estate owner. But anyway, so now we get into what's unique or why do we want to do Roth conversions? And essentially, generally speaking, a Roth type of retirement account, and there are various and assorted criteria. We'll be happy to work with you on all those rules before you go jump into the deep end. Your goal is to convert your income streams, your future income streams, to a tax-free environment. And by that I mean when you sell or during the interim years, if you have taxable income, which most of these transactions don't, they have cash flow. There's a difference between cash flow, which we want as much of that kind of income as we can get. Cash flow is good income. Taxable income is the kind we'd rather avoid until the end when we're going to get essentially a preferred treatment under the capital gain rules, or maybe you do a tax-free exchange. But in any event, Roth gives us the ability to pay an amount of tax today where we convert your account from being a type of retirement account that will be taxed when you start taking money out. We're going to agree to pay tax today. And after today, assuming qualifying distributions are made, again, there's a couple of five-year rules we need to comply with, your money that comes out of that account at that point will be tax-free. Big difference when you run your numbers or you work with us to run them. We can show you the significant increase in your wealth over the period, the rest of your life, when tax rates will most assuredly be going up. It's a matter of math. The remaining portion of the discretionary budget that we have to spend as a nation will be evaporated at the present rate we're spending money we don't have. It'll be gone by the year 2028, 29, or at the latest 2030. It depends on a number of assumptions as to the interest rates involved, the amount of money that we're borrowing. By the way, if you listen to this show, you know what I'm getting ready to tell you. We spend about $7 trillion a year on average, at least for the next 10 years, according to the Congressional Budget Office, CBO, which is the umpire that rates legislation, assesses legislation in terms of its impact on our cumulative debt, which I had a prospect I was speaking to a couple days ago, never listened to my show. In fact, they were out in LA. And they actually, when I said the cumulative debt, they said, "You mean the part we talk about in the news, or do you mean the unfunded mandate total?" And I thought, wow, you're unusual that you even know what that is. And yes, I'm talking about just the part that we cop to, we admit to, the 37 trillion now. If you want to know for sure and you want to see how fast it's going up, go to the usdebtclock.org. We're not going to do it today. I don't have time, but we've done it many times. You'll be amazed. And in any event, I believe it's going up. If I'm not mistaken, it's 6 to 8 billion a day. I'm pretty sure it's $2 trillion a year in forecasted deficits on average through 2034. Okay, it's part of the 10-year plan that Treasury, the CBO updates every year. I haven't seen it for 2025 yet. But effectively, we're taking in $5 trillion in tax receipts. We're spending $7 trillion. You tell me you don't think the tax rates will go up. Something's going to have to provide that, and it's probably not going to be debt forgiveness from the people that hold those treasury bills and treasury bonds. And what is going to happen is it's going to get harder and harder to sell them as we spend the last part of that discretionary budget, because what happens on the interest expense that we're paying out every year? It isn't going to get paid 100%. That's the first rub that's going to occur. And you see how many T-bills you can sell when there's no assurance that you're going to get paid the interest on your T-bill investment. So in any event, the ability for us to take a private company investment and convert it to Roth gives us several things. First of all, if you're invested in real estate multifamily investments, it's again the low-hanging fruit of cash flow generating assets. And so historically, as a class, it's performed very well, and in fact, in most people's experience, better than the stock market, certainly better than index funds, if that's your cup of tea. But in any event, the real beauty is the ability to, once you've taken your taxable retirement account, if it's already in Roth, then you don't have any benefit to, you cannot convert Roth to another Roth. You could do a rollover, but you can't convert, in most cases, you can do a rollover, only to another Roth, however. But the beauty of taking pre-tax money out of your 401 or your IRA, and we won't get into the details, a little bit complicated unless you've done it, I don't know, 10 times, and then you'll pretty much be an expert at that point, because most people don't do it once. But once you've taken the money, you've rolled the money out of a 401k or IRA into a self-directed 401 trust, otherwise known, the marketing term for that is solo K, where you're the trustee, you're the administrator, and now you invest the money into these real estate private syndication transactions, you get private company discounts to calculate the fair market value of the tax base that you're going to use to pay tax to convert the Roth. Two big discounts. I'm only going to mention two, but there's many others based on those risk factors that I alluded to. And I only talked about five or six of them, but there's 20 to 25. The two big ones are lack of marketability. You can't just go sell your partnership interest on a whim. You're forbidden from doing so. Read the operating agreement. That's one of the significant 50 to 250 page documents that you'll be given to review before you subscribe to the investment. It takes the lead partner is the one that, generally speaking, not always, sometimes it's put to a vote, majority vote, but in most cases, the lead partner makes the determination of when to sell, just like they make the determination of when to refinance. Refinance is better than selling in many cases, because you can pull some of your original investment out, hold the property another 3 to 5 years. It may go up, your investment may double again in that period. But the point is, you can't, it's not like the Apple stock. If you buy the Apple stock, you can go sell it 5 minutes from now if you so desire. So you've got handcuffs on. And I'm not going to get into the percentages. I'm just going to tell you it's a significant restriction, and therefore it's a significant discount. The second one that's major is lack of majority control. And therein lies the big reason why you can't determine that you want to sell the real estate. Again, the lead partner is typically the one that makes that determination. And so how does this vary if, let's say, we were dealing with assets that we had sitting at you know, Fidelity or Schwab or UBS, et cetera. Well, the way those assets would be valued, it would be based on their end of business day valuation. What's Apple selling for at the end of the day? That's the amount of money times the number of shares that you hold that would constitute the fair market value of that investment. Big difference compared to the real estate private partnership that maybe you put $100,000 in, and after you apply the assorted discounts, you've got a 30 to 60% decrement to the value. So you're going to pay tax on on $70,000 or less, maybe half in some cases. Depends on the partnership. It depends on the financial condition, the economic outlook, the nature of the very business itself. Is it a Class A apartment building on a heavily trafficked, desirable part of town, or is it a Class C in the suburbs that was rehabbed and upgraded, but still it's not the same type of business as an A grade? So you look at the earnings capacity, you look at the financial condition of your partnership, and you look at if it's a new investment where they're still doing rehab, you look at how well they're executing that rehab. Are we on track? Are we going to be able to raise the rents like we projected we would? All of this information is in the private placement memorandum as to the planning. And that's how, in part, you come up with the value that you're going to pay tax on. And that's after, I can't stress enough, it's after you've moved your money into a partnership investment. It's not while it's sitting in cash in your 401. Cash is worth dollar for dollar. You know, if you got 100 grand in cash sitting in your 401, well, guess what? It's worth $100,000. Whereas $100,000 in a newly acquired partnership asset might be worth 50, might be worth 20. Depends on what's happened since you invested your money. In any event, we're here real close to the end of the show. I just want to mention that for those of you that might be seeking to enter the private partnership space, especially multifamily, and you need someone to look over your shoulder, to look at the math, to help you understand the math so that you get better and better as you continue investing and understanding and picking, choosing the partnerships you're part of, feel free to go to our website, baplanner.com, fill out Form 1, Step 1, client profile, and then schedule a call. Be happy to discuss how, if or how we can help you and achieve your objectives. And so when you get to retirement, you've got more money to live an extended life expectancy that we all face these days. We'll be back on Sunday, 7 a.m., right here on 700 a.m. We hope you can join us.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.